You want the microphone, right?
If you have one.
If you have a microphone. We have a microphone.
Okay, before I introduce our special speaker this morning, I just want a quick comment on the rally yesterday. Okay, so first of all, you should know that there are a number of uniformed police officers, or a couple of undercover cops as well. We found out later on. And I think that's a normal protocol when, you're protesting against another government. They have Secret Service or cops. But a number came over to me, and to your credit, they all said the same thing, independently, that the guys that came today were extremely smart, respectful, knew what they're doing, and they said it was like a pleasure to work with a group like this. So I don't know what they usually deal with, but really, you guys made a great impression on the cops over there. So much so that one of them... he didn't even need the barricades around because the kids were respectful and smart. So big yashikov to all of you. Now you can clap for yourselves. Now, I guess by show of hands, how many guys were disappointed there was no coverage there? No, like media. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox 5. Everyone we called, weren't able to come down. And some of us told us that morning, hey, we can't come. There's other stuff that's going on. Okay. But the good news is there was coverage from the Five Times Jewish Times. But wait, there's more. Okay, online, there's a website, which is called Defending History, which is monitored by a Jewish guy in Vilna. He's a professor of Yiddish. I don't think he's Orthodox, but he's a very, very good, good Jewish heart. Professor David Katz. And he has a website called Defending History. I don't know if some of the guys access it or not, but we sent him all the information, and Yudel Spry, where's Yudel? Okay, he did a great job. In terms of feeding it to some of the... All the guys, Ellie, Sam, all the guys that could did a fantastic job. But when I woke up this morning, guess what? I got a nice email from the granddaughter of the Nazi Mashmal. I said, just wonderful, Rabbi. I'm in awe of your students. That's what I got. The other guy, Grant Gauchin, who was the Jewish guy that filed the lawsuit, also wrote a beautiful email supporting our efforts. And then I find out that, where's Orlansky? Where are you? Yes? Lithuanian news. Lithuanian news. So, Judy, you and I can't go to Vilna. They're going to be here for us, so you got to watch out. But really, the good news is, seriously, we talk about media coverage, yes, it's good to have coverage here, but that's not the main pitch. The main part of the story, which is crucial, is that the people in Lithuania know about it, which they now do. It's on national TV. It's on two or three of the major dailies. Now that's stimulating debate in Lithuania whether they should or should not, continue having this guy honored. So I think that's really great. The last piece of the puzzle I want to share with you, and it hasn't happened yet, I called a good friend of mine who's very actively involved in a large rabbinical group of over 1,000, Orthodox rabbis across the country. And he's actually going on a trip to Lithuania. I advised him of what he should be looking for. And when he gets back, we discuss his strategy. And sometimes, I want you to think for a second, sometimes a threat is more scary than an actual thing. Of him and I will write a letter to the Lithuanian government, to the consul general, and say we are thinking about, telling Jewish groups as community leaders not to visit Lithuania, not to visit Vilna. I think that threat itself will scare them. So the next step will be that they're going to lose money because they're really very interested in Jewish tourism in Vilna to see the old synagogue and Beit Midrash, study hall of the Vilna Gaon. If you say you're going to do it and don't do it, you lose out. We can't guarantee that Jewish tour operators absolutely will comply with this, but if we threaten them, he says, this large group of 1,000 rabbis will talk to all the congregants not to go, you know, that might scare them, and it may force them, you know, to say, hey, it's not worth it. We'll just, you know, give up this Noriega plaque, and hopefully we'll be able to get some results. So I think what we did yesterday sets the groundwork for what can hopefully be a successful effort to get them to rescind the honor that they gave this Rosh. Okay, without further ado, great pleasure to have Moshe Tarragon, a dear Chaver, a dear friend, Sherry DeBay Tover, and Samuel Marker of Aaron. Question and answer.
Okay, good morning. Good Erev Shabbos, everyone. Thank you, Rabbi Friedman, for inviting me. Thank you, Bashissa Rabbanim. It's great to be here. And I have to tell you, every time I come to Rambam, I make sure that I come for davening, because the davening is exceptional, and that's the barometer. The barometer of Avodas Hashem is how you daven. Anyone can learn, stay up here, it's got to make its way down to here, and davening is a sign that it's making its way down. So, I want to start with a question. Show of hands, how many people have heard of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? Don't be afraid. I think about 50%, okay? I'm sure that as the years go on, numbers are going to dwindle a little bit. If I come back in 2-3 years and to shed, by 30%, 20%, which is natural. And I can stand here today and tell you a little bit about his life, a little bit about who he was, give you some stories. Some of you will listen. Some of you will catch up on your sleep. Some of you will roll your eyes and interesting stories. I want you to walk out of this room with four lessons. And if you succeed at one of them, then this whole time will be worth it. Okay, there are four things about this man that I learned from amongst dozens or hundreds, but you say, oh, that's an interesting, let me try that out, let me work at that a little bit. Maybe it'll make sense to you, okay? Let me start with the following question. Why do you believe in Hashem? Why do you believe in Har Sinai? Go prove it, right? Go find out whether Hashem created the world. Who saw it? No one even saw it. You can start sitting there philosophizing and thinking and analyzing and reading books and consulting with wise people. Not gonna work, it's not gonna get you. It's a tradition. And the greater the transmission, the more robust the transmission in the Masara. When I put my head to sleep at night, I have questions. And everyone has questions. I'll be fair, I have questions. I don't know everything. Everyone in this room has questions. Your Rebbe's as well. Life's about living with questions, not having all the answers. Having the shoulders that you carry questions with you, and you can live with those questions. I have a lot of questions. I don't understand the Malik. That makes sense to me. I don't understand certain issues about in today's world and certain people are choosing certain identities that Hashem says is us, but I don't understand that. But when I close my eyes, I say, wow, I met a person who's unbelievable in every aspect of his life. He's so perfect. He worked hard, perfected his personality, studied Torah, barely slept, davened as if he was standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mean, every aspect I ever wanted to become, he was the standard bearer. I can never imagine in my life being like this man. I tried so for years. I tried and I said, you know what, it's futile. Just stop charading. Stop acting. Anybody come close to this person. That man, Rav Lichtenstein, my Rebbe, I spent over 30 years with him. He told me about his Rebbe, Rabbi Soloveitchik. And when he described Rabbi Soloveitchik to me, he described Dieter Rav Aaron. When Rav Aaron described Rav Soloveitchik to me, it sounded like I was describing Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron said, oh, I never thought I could be Rav Soloveitchik. He was so towering. He was so beyond me. And Rav Aaron told me that Rabbi Soloveitchik told him about Rav Chaim. And that when Rav Soloveitchik described Rav Chaim to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he described him in terms the same way that Rav Aaron thought about the Rav. And Rav Chaim told the Rav about the Beis Halevi, he told him about the Vilna Gaon. Guys, that's called a Masara. That's called that you meet great people and you're overwhelmed with their level and their lifestyles. And then they tell you about the people that taught them and the people that taught them and the people that taught them and people that taught them. Say, well, I belong somewhere. I'm part of something. I'm not just swimming in some dark little muddy pond trying to find land or some dry ground. I'm hooked up. I'm connected. I've got people. I've got Rebbes. They've got Rebbes. I was blown away by their example, and they described their Rebbes in the way that I saw them, and they told me how their Rebbes described their Rebbes in the way that I saw them. And wise people learn to accept delivered truths. You think that wisdom is based on self-arbitration? It isn't. It's a balance. You study, you inquire, you prove, you try to understand. But you also accept things for people because you realize the limits of your own human opportunities and human can and reach. It's a combination. You don't want it to be totally deliberate because then it's not authentic. It's got to be you. It's got to be in your heart. It's got to be something you believe in. But you also have to learn to accept certain truths from great people as you meet in your life. When you meet great people in life, it matters. It makes a difference. And I love speaking about Rav Aaron in this room. And I tell the story of Friedman all the time because when I think about my relationship with Rav Lichtenstein and the word I haven't used yet, but I'll use it in a second, I think that Rav Friedman is probably thinking about, well, that's what he's done with Chayat, and that's what he tries to convey to his Talmidim. You feel that type of connection. So you have like the secret code. We know what we're talking about. We know what it means to meet people that are surpassing, that are transcendent, that are generational, that really make these types of differences. And so there are a lot of words, guys, just get passed around. People use them all the time, and they don't really mean anything. Who's following the playoffs now, right? NBA playoffs. Guys, Warriors are going to win. There's nothing happening, okay? Nothing to watch. Ever hear the expression, must-win game? Come on, must-win. Every game's a must-win game, a must-win game. If you're up 3-0 on the Knicks, maybe it's not a must-win. Give them a couple games, must-win game, fake news. Well, he's like, what's he using the word gadol? What's the word? He's a gadol. I'm a gadol. My friend's a gadol. She's a gadol. What does that mean? I'm a gadol. Let me tell you what I saw. It means a lot. But it's depth and intensity and commitment and excellence and persistence. It's all this. It's linear. Look at my hands. Working really hard. But it's also breadth. It's also the ability to stretch your personality so broadly because your Torah and your Shemayim is so solid, and you can reconcile these traits that for some people seem contradictory. And let me tell you about four of them. These are the four I want you to think about. Rav Lichtenstein was probably one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of his generation. Svarim, articles, shiurim, tens of thousands of Talmidim across the globe. Not just in Long Island, but in Melbourne and Manchester and London and Petah Tikva and Tel Aviv. People are reading his Svarim. But it wasn't just in Torah. He had a doctorate in literature, but it just wasn't just a doctorate. There was no subject you felt he couldn't speak cogently about. But for the people who really knew him, it was about his midos, not about his erudition and his scholarship. And I want to be very clear, guys. There's a difference between chesed and midos. Chesed is your actions. Visit the sick, help out a friend, deliver food, help your parents. Midos is about character, who you are. Let's say you're placed in some desert island and there's no chesed opportunities. Who are you? How do you sculpt yourself? How do you become? Hashem gave you so much potential. How do you maximize it? How do you become a better person? Now, hopefully better midos will do chesed better and vice versa. Involved in chesed, more will trickle down and affect your midos. But I think about Rav Lichtenstein probably, not exaggerating, about 7-8 times a day. None of them about the Torah that he taught me. Here and there I'll come across a sugya, maybe he said something. Every single one of those times I think of him, it's about what type of person was he? What type of father was he? Because what type of husband? Because that's where it starts. Kedoshim Tiru. Well, I'm in Kedoshim guys, I apologize for that. You think Kedusha is just carbon, based on mikdash, a mikvah? It's just living your life the right way. Ish imo v'aviv tiro. Just honor your parents. Be honest. Have integrity. Lo techachshu, lo tshakurish b'miso. That's what echa kamachal asikil. Kedusha isn't separating from this world, finding some other space. Just living your life the right way. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. And the mina that stuck out the most was his humility. That's, if you're looking for the core trait to start building and the sense of that is a gateway to all these other great traits you want to acquire. Just think for a second in your mind. What are the five traits? And if I gave you a magic wand, here it is, magic wand time. Touch yourself over the head. those five traits all of a sudden develop. What are those five traits? What would you want to be? I'm not talking about how many zeros in your salary, how many square meters in your house. Who are you? Identity. Who do you want to be? What would those five be? So I'm sure a lot of different important midos, but it starts with humility. Because then you want to learn. You're not cocky. You accept input from other people. You study the world. You don't think you know. Arrogance is a barrier to growth. Humility is a portal. Humble person. Respect people. Let me tell you a story. One day we were sitting in Shir, and Rav Lindsay would come late from time to time because he was traveling through Beit Lechem before there was a bypass road. Our yeshiva is south of Beit Lechem, in the territories, Baruch Hashem. I'm a settler. I'm an obstacle to peace. Proud to be one. A couple of years ago, I was interviewed by the New York Times. So they said, Rabbi, what do you think about those settlers in Hebron? I said, I'm a settler. So no, those settlers in Hebron that believe every centimeter of land is theirs. I believe that. You're trying to bait me. No, those settlers in Hebron that believe every centimeter of this land is theirs and they carry guns. So I take out my UC. He was on the security team. And I'm a settler. I believe every centimeter of land is ours and I carry an Uzi. So she was trying to bait me. I didn't want a bad mouth. She said, finally, I toned her down a little. She dialed it down. She said, well, what's the difference between you and them? And I explained to her in respectful terms about their messianic view, my messianic view, but they're my teammates. I'm not going to throw them under the bus. And all of a sudden, because the New York Times is there, I'm going to slander them. So we're waiting for Shir, and 10 minutes pass, and 15 minutes pass, and half an hour passes, no Revar. So we send one of the Talmidim out to go see where he is. Now the yeshiva is situated between the community and between the schools. All the little kids walk to school from the community and they pass through the hallway. It's beautiful. See the hallway of the yeshiva filled with little kids every morning with their knapsacks. And there's a little water fountain. And there are about six or seven kids at the water fountain having water fights with each other. Like 12-year-old kids. They were throwing water at each other, taking water to their mouths, and spraying at each other. And behind these seven kids was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein waiting in line to have a drink of water. I'm going to bully my way to front of the line? But there's 70 Talmidim waiting for you. Doesn't make a difference. Midos are absolute. That's what Mida is. They're fixed. They're not based on the situation. That's situational. That context. You do the right thing. You know what courage is? The ability to do the right thing when no one is watching. When's the last time you had courage? When's the last time you picked up some litter, not because someone was watching, you tossed something into the garbage? Happens to me, maybe not to you guys. Toss something into the garbage and you miss. You say, well, maybe no one's watching, no one's seeing me. You know, you pick it up, you throw it back in. No rewards, no one's going to say anything. It's not Kiddush Hashem or Chol Hashem. You just do what's right because it's right. We would fight with him after Shir. He'd come, I promise you, the level, I'm not going to talk about this today, how much energy he had. He'd come to Shir with an entire Shas under one hand, entire Rambam under the other hand, and then the Svarim that he'd bring to Shir. He'd bring hundreds of Svarim, dozens of Svarim to Shir. And after Shir, we brought up and said, Rebbe, can we carry your Svarim back to the base of Let us carry your Svarim. He said, no, no, no. And I remember at one point there was a tug of war. We had the Svarim, he was pulling, we were pulling. And he said, no, I won't let anyone serve me. And I remember someone looked at me and said, Rebbe, don't you know you're depriving us of Shimush Talmidei Chachamim, such an important experience of Yom Shamesh Talmidei Chachamim, you're depriving us. And he looked at us and he said, I know, but I can't. I know that I'm depriving you, but it's just not in my constitution. I never let people carry my suitcases for me. I never let people do jobs. But Baruch Hu gives me strength and vigor. What makes the taxi cab driver less of a person than I am? What makes the painter or the electrician less of a person than I am? Why should he carry my luggage? Why should that person suffering enough by having to earn a living and drive around a car all night? At least give him a little respect, a little covet on them, a little sense of self by creating a moment of equality with the same person. I'm not higher than you. I'm more aristocratic, more hoity-toity. So that's the first challenge today. First challenge today is learn, study, grow, learn Torah, gain knowledge, integrate them. But know that it starts with midos. It starts with who you are as a person. To your friends, one day, Mir Tashem, when I speak with Hassan and when a boy is about to get engaged, my final sentence to him is as follows. I say, you're being a good husband is part of your avodas Hashem. It's not less than your davening, it's not less than your learning. Being a good husband, and when I challenge the husband, I feel like, I'm going out of my mind, why? Say, Rav Aaron was a good husband, I'm going to be a good husband. I'm going to give away a little bit, I'll cede a little territory, I'll be a little more flexible. That's the first one. Study, be scholarly, all that stuff, intellectual curiosity, Torah learning, Talmud Torah. But don't forget your needles, let's start there. Number two. Rav Aaron was a very, very, very sophisticated thinker. Everything was long, and everything was five different angles and 13 different options. And he used to speak Friday nights between Kabbalah, Shabbos, and Maariv for about an hour and a half. My wife would wait for me to make Kiddush. In the summer, we'd start davening at 8 o'clock. We'd make Kiddush at 10:30 at night. I'd come home from yeshiva. My wife would say, what did Rav Aaron speak about tonight? And I said, he said that Moshe was a good person. You said it took him an hour and a half to say that. But it wasn't a statement. Everything was, take five steps back. What does good mean? How does certain people define good? What is the difference between good to Hashem and good to people? What are the dangers of too much benevolence? Everything is, don't just be telescopic. Be panoramic. Don't just look at an idea. Look at where it comes from. Look at the context. But some people are too sophisticated for their own good. There are times in life that there's clear distinctions between black and white, between good and evil, between morality and criminality. And sometimes sophisticated people have a hard time. You know what it's called? It's a fancy word. It's called moral relativism. Some feel that Barack Obama was the poster boy. They're not really terrorists, they're gunmen. They're not really murderers, they're just freedom fighters. You have to understand their pride has been wounded and their culture has been eviscerated. There's evil in this world. There's moral stands. Look at where you were yesterday. You took a moral stand. There's no shades of gray to what you did yesterday. It's black and white. 15,000 people. Holocaust. Genocide. Holocaust was different. It wasn't part of what we've experienced for the last thousands of years. It was different. Hitler didn't want to rid Germany of Jews like the French wanted to, or the English wanted to, or the Spanish. He had a list of 200 Albanians in his bunker, 200 Albanian Jews. Could you imagine? Someone showing your mind got a list of 200 Albanian Jews. He had blueprints of synagogues in New York City. Take moral clarity. There are times in life that you can't overanalyze and see every perspective and take moral stands, have a sense of moral righteousness. Remember Rav Aaron Soloveitchik used to come here when he was, I've never seen anyone with such irrepressible moral integrity. It was simply stunning. It was so, I mean, we walked into Shia with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and he would read Besule, his deep Lithuanian Besule, this is Leon Levy. Those conservative rabbis, and then you go on a 1 or 2 hour tirade. And the next day, read Tosfos Shaktu. Shaktu, those Republicans. We never got to the circuit because he was always giving these moral tirades against the Republicans, then against who knows what. It was irrepressible. In 1973, the eve of the Yom Kippur War, a Libyan civilian airliner invaded Israeli airspace. And after repeated warnings to identify themselves, they didn't, and the Israeli Air Force shot down an airplane, which they thought may have been a terror weapon, and they shot down and killed about 150 innocent civilians. Everyone in the country said, it's a casualty of war. We're in a warlike environment. We couldn't take any chances. Who knows? We tried. Move on. Rav Aaron said no. There has to be an investigation. We can't, as a people, we can't have this blood on our hands. And he went to the Knesset, to Yosef Berg, who was the head of the Mizrahi party. It's actually an interesting story. He was sitting in the office demanding an inquiry, demanding an investigation, and Yosef Berg was resisting, and then finally the phone rang. Yosef Berg picks up the phone, he was a Knesset member, says a few words, puts the phone down and looks at Rav Aaron and says, "You'll now have your investigation." Rav Aaron says, "Why?" He says, "That was about Soloveitchik on the phone, who called demanding an investigation. You guys went yesterday to protest. Let me tell you what happened in 1968. There was some small little Central African country whose name even I don't know. And there was some, who knows what, some putsch or some civil war, and they needed protest. Rav Aaron was the head of the Kollel at YU. So he woke the whole Kollel up. They davened Matzikin. They learned Hatshir. And then they went to the UN to protest on behalf of these innocent victims in some Central African country. There were 19 people at that protest. 13 of them were smicha students from YU. Okay, you don't have to go to every single protest in the world. I don't know, ask yourself the following question. Here's a good question to ask, guys. Okay, forget protests, forget. Had a wonderful Pesach. Ate a lot of food. Some of you went to Great Adventure. Watched a lot of sports. Don't raise your hands, but ask yourself the following question. Were any of you troubled, even a little bit, for a minute, about Sri Lanka? 500 people, hundreds more maimed, all of them innocent. Did you get on a plane to Sri Lanka? No. Did you stop your learning? No. But it's inconceivable that a grandchild of Avraham Avinu is celebrating the time we became a people, and 500 people are being murdered mercilessly and doesn't even register. Say a Baruch Atel. Say a Baruch Atel, and we'll just think about it and say, Baruch Hashem, that I live in a protected country and Hashem chose me. That's the second issue. Take moral stands. And Baruch Hashem is such a moral backbone to the school and to your program. And all your rabbis deserve a lot of credit for that. There are times to take moral stands, because it's not just because of what's going to happen in Ukraine and what Rabbi Friedman said, maybe it will happen. It's because moral courage is contagious. Because if you take a moral stand in one place, it will affect you in other areas, in more quiet and subtle areas of your life. If you do what's right, you'll have that consistency. You'll train yourself that way. So the first one, guys, is middos, not just knowledge. The second one is think. Not everything in life is black and white. We live in an age, unfortunately, which you have to make quick decisions. Social media, like, not like, am I Republican, am I Democrat? Be a little more sophisticated. Think about life. Make decisions on your own. How many people, how many guys here watch videos because how many views it got? That's called groupthink. That's not individual think. Watch a video because you want to see what's on the video. Not because everyone's watching it. So think. But there are times in which, don't think about too much. It's pretty clear what the answer is. Number three. I fear that your generation, I fear, looks at the world as a darker place than we did. Social media has that way. Tabloids have that way. You open up the Post, you open up the news, you're seeing crimes, and you're seeing people taking advantage of other people, and conspiracies, and scandals. It also captures news. And everything is documented. These things always happened. Just didn't read about them. 95% of the people in this world are good people. Do you hear what I said? 95%. Some of them are not educated enough. Some of them are a little lit. 95%. It's the 5% that are controlling. Respect people. Respect people. Learn from people. A lot of good people in this world. Rav Aaron was what we call a humanist. He really deeply, deeply believed in people. And he showed a lot of respect to people. At his shiva, these were the three groups of people that were crying the most. Talmidim, he had taught for 30 years. Who was bawling? The grocery store owner in Katamo, where he hadn't lived for 10 years, who was crying, "I'll never meet a kinder person in my life." And I know what that grossy person was. I promise you, I will never meet a kinder person. I know I meet a lot of people. The kindness, be a kind, sweet, embracing, positive person. Second group, the Aniyim. The Aniyim would line up outside the door at night. You could, if you wanted to find Rav Aaron's house, you just looked for the Aniyim. And there were stories where the Aniyim would come in not knowing who he was, and Rav Aaron was such a kind person. He says, well, you need money, you don't have a job, your wife's sick, the medical bills are piling up, you have a lot of debt. Maybe it's time to stop learning and go get a job. Just offer them kind advice. And they didn't know that he was one of the Gedolei HaDor, so they would start fighting with him. Well, what do you mean? Talmud Torah, I can't stop learning, it's impossible. And then Rav Aaron would write them a lavish check. Write them hundreds of shekel checks afterwards, after they were lambasted for. Then he was standing outside of his shiva crying. But the most amazing, the Arab work team in the yeshiva was bawling, the Palestinians. There were about 10 or 15 Palestinians that work in yeshiva, cleanup crew, maintenance crew. Because every Arab Rosh Hashanah, everyone's busy, mikvah, tefillos, learning, family. Rav Aaron would go over to every single Palestinian worker and wish them a Shana Tova, and ask them about their wives, and in many cases, many wives, and their children, and he knew them by name. He knew all of their wives by name, because he wished them every year. So the next time you see someone, and you think, oh, I don't really have to give that person the time of day, he's just a science teacher. She's just a college guy, and she's just... Respect human beings. That's part of Tzelem Elokim. That's part of your Avodas Hashem. It's part of who you are. These are Midos guys. And that's why he would quote to us from so many different sources. Not like he was philosophically, you know, you guys maybe talk about a lot, Torah and Mada, and what's the combination, and what do the Greeks think, and what do the Jews think, and what do the Romans think, and math. And that was the rough. Rav Aaron was just, he believed so deeply in human beings, he thought that if someone had something interesting to say, he wanted to read about it. And I have a raya, I'll just try to tell you a raya. One night, it was Friday night, he was giving a long sikha, a long speech, and everyone, of course, was dozing in the front row, falling asleep. And then all of a sudden, Rav Aaron shouts at the top of his lungs, and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And all of a sudden, 50 heads shut up. Did he just quote a Mother Goose rhyme? But evidently, it's a metaphor for the fall of man. That man, when he left Gan Eden, fell so deeply that they couldn't put it back together again. After the Shir, all the Israelis were coming over to us and saying, Mise Humpty Dumpty, Rishon, Achron, Eze Seichu, who's this Humpty Dumpty we haven't heard of? It's Mother Goose. Can't imagine if I saw a Vedic ever quoting Humpty Dumpty. He quotes Kant and Plato and Aristotle and Heidegger. And I was quoting just people that... That's number three. Number one, midos, not just knowledge. Number two, sophistication, but moral clarity. Number three, believe in people. Hashem made human beings good. You guys read Animal Farm? We don't agree. Okay? Anyone read Dostoevsky? Yeah. We don't agree. Shlomo HaMelech doesn't agree. Elokim masas adam yashar behemem ekshu cheshbanos rabim. Every person was made proper with virtue and sin. Elokim, we don't agree that man left to their own devices will deteriorate to moral chaos. Not true. The hard world. Some people have their virtue stripped, but finally, guys, here's number four. Rav Aaron was asked a few years before he died what they should write on his keter. You would need five gravestones to describe this man. That wouldn't be enough. He said he wants two words. No poetry, no long highfalutin psukim, no long descriptions. He wants two words on his keter. Oved Hashem. And you go to his keter today, there are two words. Oved Hashem. You see, guys, sometimes in the modern world, we go too far in selling religion to make it fit modern sensibilities. Let me tell you the words that you associate with religion, okay? Meaning, content, purpose, redemptiveness, nobility, right type of lifestyle. You know what religion is? It's called Avodas Hashem. It's called serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's working at it, seeing yourself as an Eved. When's the last time, here's a good quick question, when's the last time you did something in your Avodas Hashem that was hard? Shabbos isn't hard today. Who's going to have a hard Shabbos? Hot plates, chalani. Heat's going to work, light's going to work. When's the last time you really pushed yourself because I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to be his Eved, I want to work in it, I want to be... You know, look and see when he walked into the room, it was like the sun walked in. You literally, the room stopped. Imagine one of these movies where the room just freezes. That's how noble he was. That's how knowledgeable. That's how kind. You felt like someone landed from a different planet. But then when you saw him shouting to Hillel, and you saw him screaming Yehi Shmei Rabbah, where's Aaron? Remember the Berachas HaTorah? Shatter the Shamayim, screaming Berachas HaTorah at the top. Come on, who screams to Hillel? We're the sophisticated people. We read, we think, we talk about it. Who screams to Hillel? Those are the mikveh dippers. Those guys down the block, the mikveh dippers. They're the Tehillim shatters. We're more genteel. We're more sophisticated. No, instead of all Avodas Hashem, when you stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you shofech libo, you cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you succumb to his will when you have to and when it doesn't make sense. So those are four takeaways, guys, okay? See if you can try them one for size. Because it's not just about hearing stories about great people. Great people who live pretty close to them. I'm not describing the Chassam Sofer. That's 200 years ago. I'm not describing the Rambam. That's 800 years ago. I'm not describing Rabbi Akiva. That's 2,000 years ago. These are people you read about in books. Someone that walked and was in this room 10 years ago. So I want to share a little bit about him with you. Try to take away one of those four. Think about your midos, not just your knowledge. Think about clarity, morality, doing the right thing. Think about how you see other people in this world. Do you respect them? And then finally, remember, as much as religion will add to your life, it's about you, it's about making your life better, and it's not just about you. Not just, Hashem isn't there to serve you. Keep it in mind. Torah isn't there to serve you. It's there as well. But you're there to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Make sure that hierarchy exists. Okay, guys? Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Have a good Shabbos.
Okay. Couple minutes question and answer. Okay.
Yeah, what's your name?
Yaakov.
Yeah, so in regards to what you were just saying about being an Oved Hashem, we have Sefer Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, all the Nevi'im HaKronim that talk about this, but this is going with the implication that people believe in Hashem. What about the people who it's become more of a problem today? A lot of people don't believe in Hashem.
So first of all, I'm very impressed. Very few high school boys can say, Yirmiyahu Yeshayahu. So I'm kind of like a boy that you know this far. We believe that that one day, no matter how alien and secular the world feels, we're living in a hard time. Yesterday was Yom HaShoah. It's not easy to pass the Holocaust. A lot of people lost their faith in the Holocaust. We're living after the world of modernization. Before 1800, the world wasn't open to Jews. Now, after 1800, it's called enfranchisement, where Jews were allowed to come into the community and work. And a little bit of historical sweep. I promise you, Yirtz Hashem, through our effort, and through HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intervention, people will turn back to their Ribbono Shel Olam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that there's a haftacha from Hashem that Sof Yisrael lasos tshuva v'sof yimeim. And in the end of days, everyone will do tshuva. So part of being a Yid is not just living in the world you see, but living in the world that you envision. Understand? Sight is a faculty. Vision is an art. So I can see you right now, but the question is, where's my vision? What am I thinking about? Think about things you can't see. We're doing pretty good. You ever hear the expression, boys, niskatnu hadaros? Our daros have deteriorated, and everyone before us was fantastic, and we're all midgets. It's not true. It's true in some regards. It's not true in other regards. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Jewish people two tests in the last century. Number one, the Holocaust, surviving the Holocaust and reconstituting ourselves, which is not a simple test. And number two, building the state of Israel under such fierce opposition, under such incalculable odds. And Am Yisrael has passed both of those tests unbelievably. And that gives us chus and shemayim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at you, he's saying, wow, look at these years. Look at my children. Who would have thought that a people could pass such two stiff tests within such close proximity? So we're getting there. Take a while. That can happen overnight. We're about to celebrate the 71st year of the State of Israel. Anyone know how long the Soviet Union lasted? 69. Could you imagine being in Vegas in 67, taking a bet on the State of Israel? Get pretty good odds, which would last longer. We're chosen as a people because we don't operate under the normal patterns of history. What affects most people, politics, history, doesn't affect us. We're beyond that. And the same thing with tshuva. Am Yisrael has the capacity to do tshuva. You just have to believe in Am Yisrael also. Okay? When you see a yid who's not from, these are the emotions you shouldn't feel. Hate, contempt, alienation, anger. These are the emotions you should feel. Okay, I wish we're better. Sad, but who knows what they went through. Kodesh Baruch Hu will still have his say about this issue. One day they'll be back. Okay, kind, embrace, not anger and zeal and puritanical, fanatical distaste. Okay? Yes, sir.
Thank you for your moving words. Just a question that always bothered me, first of all, about it, is talked about sophistication on the one hand, but moral clarity on the other hand. But I always was personally found difficult to understand there how we can support the Oslo peace process if we're dealing with a question of moral clarity versus, you know, don't overly think. If you see evil, I call it out as such and not overly.
Right.
Right.
So first of all, it's not a kasha or a baron, because a lot of Gedolim support it. The Shas party was supportive of it. Rav Yosef was supportive of it. So it's really a broader question. I lived through Oslo. I lived through the 80s. People felt, and hindsight shows that they were wrong, that there was a real chance. We were wrong. I wasn't sophisticated enough to have an opinion. Just made all the other people that supported it thought that there was a real chance. The yeshiva was not a politically oriented, no one really talked politics. He didn't really talk about politics a lot. He didn't allow us to talk about politics. It wasn't on the agenda, so it's not like he gave a sikha about it. It was his opinion. Many people support it. I mean, we'd all agree at some point that if we had a real concrete chance to save lives on both sides of the ledger, it's something we should think about. Unfortunately, it's been proven to be a mirage and almost like a bad joke. But if push came to shove, we knew we could save millions, and not just lives, but all the difficulties and strain and then suffering. Look, Palestinians suffer. When I drive in the West Bank, I'm very, very machbid at every traffic circle to give the right of way to a Palestinian. Because my heart goes out to them. It takes me half an hour to get to Yerushalayim. It takes them 2 hours. Because they have to go through roadblocks and checkpoints, and most of them are just regular fathers and husbands like you and me. Because of the terrorists. They're not active terrorists. So I feel like it's my responsibility. So I'll get there a second later. I'll just give them a little kabanatsi, or just give them a little bit of kabanatsi and make them feel that. So if we can solve all of that, you know, it's also to give back land. We're saying Shulchan Aruch. That's already a more complicated question. But it wasn't naivete, or it wasn't, you know, this is an immoral choice. Or people really believe it.
And what about the Jews who suffer as a result?
Those that thought it would succeed thought that it could be a maintainable situation, unfortunately.
Do you understand the sin
of Yishmael? I don't think anyone was underappreciating the sin of Yishmael. I don't think it's going to disappear and they'll be our best friends. But think about Mitzrayim, the sin of the Egyptians in Mitzrayim. Was the peace deal with Egypt 30 years ago appropriate? In hindsight, it's a cold piece. They're not our friends. They're not supporting the state of Israel. Baruch Hashem, look at all the lives we've saved. Look at the borders we've solidified. We're not playing endgame. This is a messianic endgame. Shimon Peres will build a new Middle East. It's just that we can contain the situation as best we can. At Shevo Goldsender. And limit the bloodshed. What wasn't like that?
I'm going to talk about one more question.
Sure.
One more question,
yeah. Okay. What's your name?
Mordechai.
Mordechai what?
Ruler.
Okay, Mordechai.
So, based on what Rabbi Kobe said, isn't there a Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, Perek Gimel, where they talk about how at the end of the day, Yishmael and Arzisal are going to work together?
Are going to work together.
Yeah, are going to work together. How Yishmael will support them and Arzisal will be doing the learning. So, through that Mishnah, could it be that Rabbi Aaron was leading that Mishnah to, based on his opinion of Oslo?
That it contradicts his opinion of Oslo.
No, it seems that it supports him. It looks like you look at the Tosafot Yom Tov there. It seems like he's supporting him because well, Oslo explained this by somebody by the name of Rabbi. I forgot the name, sorry. But he lived locally, but he told me about that through the Tosafot Yom Tov, you're able to understand that that even though through all the suffering, it's going to get worse and then it'll get better. So why couldn't so? Would you say that's safe to assume, based on that Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, that he would use exactly to support his opinion?
I never asked him, but he may have. He may have. The Rambam writes about Mashiach. We don't know the details until it happens. We've waited a long time for Mashiach. We'll continue to wait. To be very careful about saying, oh, Mashiach's here, therefore make this decision and that decision. The two things that have to guide our decisions, boys, are as follows. The same two things that have guided our decisions in the last 2,000 years. Halacha and pragmatism, morality. You can't all of a sudden say, Mashiach's era. I'll just tell you a story before we end. Anyone here at the Kutzker Rebbe? Okay. The Kutzker Rebbe once told this Talmidim, you know, everyone says when Mashiach comes, everyone's going to run to the train and run to the plane and go greet Mashiach and put on their best suit and make a mad dash. He says, I'm going to wait a few weeks to go see Mashiach. So the Talmidim were shocked. Rebbe, what's going on? Okay. Mashiach Tzankumen, you're going to wait 3 weeks and go see the Mashiach? No, wait a couple of weeks. I'll stroll in leisurely. I'll come say hello to you when I get a chance, when it fits my schedule. What does that mean? Mashiach's here. He says, because I want to come in a little bit late, and Mashiach's going to look at me and say, Mendel, his name is Mendel, where were you? I waited for you. Now I'm going to look him in the eye and say, ah, chutzpah. Ah, chutzpah, you waited for me. Don't you say you waited for me. Ah, chutzpah, I waited for you. You can wait for me a few weeks. So it's wrong, we've waited long enough. We continue to wait. Baruch Hu will tell us when the time is. Very careful about deciding what decisions to make based on the Mishnah of Avodah Zarah.
Thank you, Rabbi Sarah. Come on. Let's head back to you again.